Welcome to Locked On Heat. On today's show, with a month to go before training camp begins, we ask and answer the biggest questions for the Miami Heat, including which starting jobs are most up for grabs, who has the most to prove, and if they can repeat as the top seed in the East. All of that and much more coming up next.
You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, welcome to Locked On Heat, your daily podcast covering all things Miami Heat. However you might be tuning in on YouTube, Odyssey, or on your favorite podcast app, thank you so much for making Locked On Heat your first listen every day. I'm Wes Goldberg here with David Ramil. Training camp begins in about a month, so we thought we could use this as a reason to just look ahead and have an early conversation about the biggest storylines heading into camp. So we'll discuss who has the most to prove, who could be this season's breakout role player, and if Miami can repeat as one of the top seeds in the East. But first, let's look at the starting lineup, which could see some changes despite last season's success. PJ Tucker, obviously no longer a part of Miami, off to the Philadelphia 76ers, making the power forward job up for grabs. But Tyler Hero, after winning Sixth Man of the Year, could have a claim for a promotion and that starting shooting guard spot. So David, let's start here. What job is more up for grabs, power forward or shooting guard in that starting lineup?
Technically, the power forward spot is more up for grabs. I mean, I don't think that there's a whole heck of a lot of viable options on this roster, at least not currently. And I don't know that they're going to be able to make a change over the next few weeks before training camp starts, or that somebody's going to suddenly shake free from any other roster and could land in Miami. Doesn't seem like they're going to be making any trades anytime soon. So the power forward spot is definitely more up for grabs, and just the sense that there is no clear favorite, there's no even clear option, as I said before. Having said all that, I think the expectations for the four spot are so low that I'm not even really counting on it. It doesn't seem like there's a lot of anticipation building up to it. Like, there are questions, there are concerns, and I think those are all valid. Having said all that, the shooting guard spot and whoever winds up taking it, whether it's Oladipo, Gabe Vincent, Tyler Hero, who we expect, I think, to be the starter, the production from that position, yeah, Max Strus, the production from that spot has to be so much more, it's so much higher than whatever we're expecting out of the power forward spot, that I think that's where the focus is going to be, is on who earns that spot, because they have the opportunity to be the team's leading scorer. And so I think there's going to be much more focus on that, if not necessarily which one is more up for grabs. I think there's just the idea is that whoever winds up emerging as a starter is going to be have the opportunity to be a significant contributor, not just as a defensive end, but also as the team's leading scorer.
To your point, like, who the starting power forward is this year might just be semantics, right? Like, this is the guy who starts for the first few minutes of the game.
Right.
And then next thing you know, Jimmy Butler is sliding into the four in a smaller unit. Or Bam Adebayo is moving over in a bigger unit next to Dwayne Dedman or Amar Yurtseven or something like that. So I do agree that the hottest position battle is that shooting guard spot, because Tyler Hero has sort of earned it. I kind of agree with what he said after the season. Like, you were just named best in the league at being sixth man.
Yeah.
And usually that something like that would come with a promotion, right? Okay, you were awesome at this. Here's a promotion. But Max Strus locked it down. We saw some videos last week of him playing in a Chicago pro-am run where he was showing off like dunks and lobs and looking bigger, the way that Tyler Hero has looked bigger and
leaner,
you know, we'll see like what kind of and leaner, and we'll see what kind of improvement Max Strus makes. Like, all this stuff is on Tyler Hero's development. We talk about it all the time. Max Strus is still developing, right? He just got into the starting lineup. He just carved out a role in the NBA. He's still getting better.
He's fighting for his second contract. If you don't think that's a motivational factor, you don't know the NBA. Like, this is absolutely driving. He has an opportunity to be collecting somewhere north of $10 million a year next, you know, the following contract. That's exactly what he's fighting for.
And Victor Oladipo also has his share of motivation, too. I was texting with somebody who works with Oladipo over the summer, and he said he looks even better than he did last year.
Nice.
So, I mean, obviously they're going to say something like that, but it checks out, like, first summer of work in Miami without, you know, having to rehab an injury. And this is going to be his first training camp ever for the Heat. Isn't that something? He wasn't available for training camp last year, did not have an opportunity to carve out a role, not even talking about a starting job.
Right.
And now he's going to be completely healthy for training camp and have an opportunity to go ahead and make a case for a starting position. All of this stuff is so fluid. You know, I call it shooting guard and power forward, but what if Jimmy Butler becomes the power forward? That opens up the, right. you know, the small forward spot right. for somebody else. Like, there's so many things. I'm still going to go with the power forward position, not the shooting guard position, though I agree with everything you said about the importance of that competition in training camp. But I also think that there's quite a bit of importance in that power forward spot just to find somebody who makes a semblance of sense at that spot, because they are losing so much from PJ Tucker. I think a lot of Heat fans have gotten into the act of, well, you know what, PJ, we're not losing all that much with PJ Tucker. Look at his box score. His stats weren't that great. Like, the same Heat fans that were saying, well, you can't measure PJ Tucker by the box score last year all the time, and singing his praises, Heat culture, all this stuff. Like, it is a big loss. It is. And it's not something that they've filled. Caleb Martin and Haywood Highsmith are going to be the two guys, I think, most in competition for that spot. Absolutely. But also Jimmy Butler. Also Bam Adebayo. Like, there's going to be opportunities for a lot of guys to fill minutes at that position. And that says nothing about a potential trade at that spot. Like I said, we still have a month to go before training camp begins. What if Miami's able to flip Duncan Robinson for a power forward who makes sense in terms of a starter between now and the opening of training camp? And that player all of a sudden becomes part of the mix at that competition spot. So I'm going to go with power forward just because I think you need to find something there that is like a replacement level power forward at least, because right now I don't know that Miami has that. Though I see your point about shooting guard, and it's going to be really interesting. A team, again, that just was the number one seed in the Eastern Conference, seemingly having two spots in that starting lineup up for grabs, is a rare thing, but it's an interesting thing, and it could really change the way that this team looks. That said, which player has more pressure on them in training camp? And I'm going to give you three to choose from, David.
Okay, sounds
Kyle
good.
Lowry, mm-hmm. Kyle Lowry, Victor Oladipo, or Duncan Robinson?
Well, he could pretty much do away with Lowry. I think the review of his season last year has been so negative, I think, from a large portion of Heat fans, and I think a lot of that's exaggerated. Having said that, I also think that he's accomplished so much over the course of his career that he's not really proving anything to anybody other than himself. Yes, he wants to contribute at a high level. He came here to win a title. He said so numerous times last year. He said so at the end of the season, calling last season basically a failure because they didn't achieve their goal. He'll go out there and he's going to perform at a high level. I have incredible amounts of faith in what Lowry will bring to the table. I think he will report to camp in quote-unquote world-class shape, a la Pop, you know, Pat Riley's request in his end-of-season presser. But I also don't see him having to prove anything to anybody. He's done this. He's won at a high level. He's got a championship already. He's a potential Hall of Famer. He's a multi-time All-Star. He's accomplished that. Similarly, Duncan Robinson would only have to prove things to himself. Like, he's already gotten his second contract. He's already gotten paid. Yes, that's not nearly enough. He's motivated to play at a high level, etc. I also don't think that he has to do much more to show that. Like, the reports of his demise have been so greatly exaggerated that even when we speak, when you and I speak highly of him or the potential that he can continue to show out next season, everybody responds with like, oh, he's a bum. He's like, no, he's not. He's a 38% three-point shooter. Like, that's historically good. He's been a really, really good shooter throughout his career, and he'll continue to be that. I think he can take his game to another level. That's what Pat Riley wants him to do. That's what the coaching staff wants him to do. He's certainly capable of that. This is on Victor Oladipo. You signed 2 1-year prove-it deals. You've got to prove something. This is your opportunity. You're fighting for a chance to show that not only can you continue to stick around the NBA, which is exactly what he's fighting for, but that you can also be a high-level player. Do you return to your all-star level? And that's where the gauge is different. Duncan just has to be moderately better in order for Heat fans to go, oh, yeah, that's right. He is a really good shooter who's limited in some other aspects. For Oladipo, the bar is so high based on what he was earlier in his career that this is why he has more to prove than anybody else.
Victor Oladipo is a player option for next season. That's really, to me, the pressure year. I don't disagree with you. I think Victor Oladipo does have a ton of pressure on him. It's pressure that he puts on himself as well. He has said he is putting that pressure on him in a very public way, saying, I could still be an all-NBA player. I could still be an all-star. I am still that guy. And he has yet to show it. It's for 4 years. He hasn't shown it. And there's reasons why, injuries and all these other things that have backtracked him. But the point is, he has not shown it in 4 years that he could be that guy. But I still think it's Kyle Lowry. Mm. I still think it's Kyle Lowry. And I'll tell you why. $29.7 million, yeah. David. $29.7 million. That's more than what Victor Oladipo and Duncan Robinson make combined. Everybody likes to harp on the Duncan Robinson contract. We're talking about Victor Oladipo's new deal. But Kyle Lowry makes almost $30 million. He's paid like a superstar player, and he wasn't that last year. I agree with you. I think it's gone way too far in terms of criticism of what he was last year. He was immensely helpful when he was on the court last year, and it wasn't like, I know the conditioning was a thing because of Pat Riley's comments, but he was off the court because of mostly personal issues. Now, conditioning and injuries did become a problem in the postseason. But if those personal issues can get behind him, and you and I expect that the conditioning will be better, because I still think the conditioning needed to be better than what it was last year.
Absolutely.
And I think he recognized that, and we're seeing some of that play out right now in the summer. But he just needs to be better. Like, last year, averaging less than 14 points per game, that's the fewest amount of points he's averaged in a game since becoming a full-time starter more than a decade ago. Like, he needs to flatly be better. They needed more from him. They got him as this big, splashy guy to pair next to Jimmy Butler. We talk about how that shooting guard spot is so important because that guy could be the second best or maybe even the leading scorer on this team. Kyle Lowry's a guy who can average 18, 19, 20 points per game, and he didn't last year. There is a lot, I think, of pressure on him. Not to mention that he's 36 years old and sort of on the fringe of a Hall of Fame career.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know that right now, if he retired, he would be in the Basketball Hall of Fame. If he were to if he had another great year and Miami somehow miraculously won a championship and he added another ring to his resume, now that Hall of Fame case is a little bit more solidified. So I'm going to go ahead with Kyle Lowry. I think there is a lot of pressure on him from fans and from everybody else, though. There's also a lot of pressure on Victor Oladipo as well. There's a lot of pressure on the Miami Heat in general. According to Vegas, their over-under total for wins is at 49.5. We'll talk about whether or not we expect them to exceed that or even reach that in the next segment. But first, we have an important message. Are you one of those people who thinks that it's okay to drive stoned? What's the worst that can happen? You end up driving below the speed limit? It's no big deal, right? Wrong. The truth is, your reaction time slows way down when you're high. Not only do you put yourself in danger, but everybody else around you. Talk about a buzzkill. Stop kidding yourself. It's not okay to drive high. If you've been using marijuana in any form, do not get behind the wheel. If you feel different, you drive different. Drive high. Get a DUI. Back here with Locked On Heat, we're discussing the biggest storylines and questions a month out from training camp. Some might call this a way too early preview, but David, it's not way
I'm
too
excited.
Early preview. It's never too early
I'm
to talk
excited.
About the Miami. We're talking hoops here, baby.
Yeah, I mean, after months and weeks of speculation about trades and trade machines and who are you going to send out for who, I mean, the roster is basically set. Maybe they'll make a change, maybe they won't, but either way, you're going into camp. You've got a lot to answer, a lot of questions, a lot of things to prove, as you mentioned before.
Let's talk. We're going to talk about the over-under total set by Vegas at 49.5. But before we get to that question, I have this one for you, David.
All right.
Who could be this season's sort of breakout role player? Let's put it this way. Who could be this season's Max Strus for the Miami Heat? Who are you looking at?
That is a really tough question because my expectations are, like as I said before, so low for the power forward spot that whoever emerges that, and I imagine it probably is a... Well, not a contributor, not somebody who was part of the rotation player, or rotational player last year. Like Caleb, it just doesn't seem viable to me, and so I'm still looking at somebody else emerging. And I think Haywood Highsmith seems like that guy. Like everything we've heard about the beliefs from the front office, the coaching staff, the fact that they brought him back last year, they believe in him and his ability to contribute at a high level, but. As much as I want to lean towards Highsmith, is it too far-fetched to say that Gabe Vincent could be that guy? Just because I think the expectations for him, like he's already, this is his fourth year with the team all? I mean, he was there during the bubble. He's been with the team for a number of seasons now, but even still.
I think he might be past it. I mean, he was starting games in the playoffs from Kyle Lowry. Like I feel like that breakout already happened. We could have named this, we could have called this question, who's this year's Gabe Vincent?
You're right.
I feel like we've got. I think the candidates are. It's Haywood Highsmith to your point, which I think would be a good one. Great summer league, just like Max Strus last year, kind of broke out in the summer league with that big game winner, flurry of three pointers, kind of carried that momentum into the regular season, and by the end of it, carved out a regular role. Haywood Highsmith, there's an opportunity there too, especially because not just he had a great summer league performance that the Heat coaching staff and front office was really impressed with, but also because the opportunity is going to be there, right? There is a clear path to playing time for Haywood Highsmith. He just has to grab those minutes. I think Omer Yurtseven is another guy who didn't get a ton of, he was out of the rotation for, you know, by the end of the season last year. And I think the two-way guys, I think Marcus Garrett, who's been sort of in and around the Heat organization for the last couple of years, he's a guy who's on a two-way contract. That didn't stop Caleb Martin from elevating from two-way to a regular roster spot. Darius Days, sort of an interesting name there too.
Yeah.
I think there's quite a few other players that you could look at who didn't really have a role last year.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, Yurtseven is certainly an enticing option, I think. Just, and it's not to fan the flames of a very vocal minority among the fan base that thinks that he could take his game to another level, be a starting center, be a great player. Like, the expectations maybe are a little outsized from those fans. Having said that, look, he's also, you know, a legit seven-footer that showed real promise in those games. Like, I would like for him to be much more consistent, to show that he can play at the NBA level, that he's made adjustments, because that's what it takes, right, to get from year to year. You're making small incremental leaps throughout your career from a good player or a player that can show that at the very least you belong in the NBA. I think he's proven that. Last year dispelled the notion that maybe he wasn't an NBA level player, because he started and he functioned and he played well. He had his moments, and yes, he was out of the rotation by the time the playoffs came around. This is the next level then. Can you be out on the floor in crunch time situations? Can you be out there when you've got the game going, when you've got your shot falling, when your rebounding numbers don't seem so exaggerated or gaudy or anything like that? That's a really interesting option. Is that your pick? Is it Yurtseven?
I would go Highsmith, but I also wrote down Yurtseven. Mm-hmm. I like Yurtseven. Look, the thing with him that stands out, in if you want to make the exact Max Strus comparison, Max Strus obviously developing throughout the course of the regular season, elevated to the starting lineup by the time the playoffs, or by the end of the regular season, and was starting obviously in the playoffs. I could see Yurtseven following a similar path. I think what's so interesting about the Dwayne Dedmon contract that they signed is not just that it's chunky, but that also I think it's that he's still the backup center. Right. I think a lot of people are ready to kind of make Yurtseven the backup center. And I think it's pretty clear, just based on talking with coaches and even Pat Riley's comments after the season, that there's still a little bit of development, still a little bit of refinement that Omer Yurtseven has to go through before he could play a regular rotation role. But we tend to look at these things as sort of year-to-year things.
Yeah.
Sometimes that can happen in the course of a regular season. We just saw it happen with Max Strus. Not a good defender to start last season. Became a serviceable defender by the end of the season. That's sort of where Yurtseven has to go. There's things defensively where he has to work on where it's clunky. If he could smooth out his what he needs to smooth out defensively and just become, like you said, more consistent on offense even, I think maybe by the trade deadline, Miami is comfortable enough with Yurtseven that they can move on from Dwayne Dedmon, trade him to whomever, and then be comfortable with Yurtseven playing the backup center spot. I don't think Yurtseven gets the starting job and pushes Bam Adebayo power forward. I don't think that happens, to your point. But he could certainly be the backup center playing real, you know, 10 to 15 minutes a game by the end of the regular season. Well, so I would say Yurtseven or Highsmith, but I also wouldn't rule out Darius Days.
Yeah.
I don't know why. I'm just saying.
No, I was going to say about Yurtseven. Like, I mean, what if that's the in-season wrinkle that all of a sudden leads to, I don't know, a 5-8-game win streak or something like that? Because these things do happen. Like, he went in there as a starter, was productive.
Sure.
And then, you know, we're all looking at what happened in the Orlando bubble when Jay Crowder was inserted in the starting lineup and Myers Leonard was taken out. What if this is the inverse of that, where all of a sudden you wind up going big and, you know, Yurtseven maybe not in the scouting reports to the same degree. All of a sudden you just wind up dominating, crushing teams on the glass, et cetera. Like, you know, having the two big lineup could be what helps Miami take it to another level.
They're going to need something like that, right?
They're going to be lineups like that.
Look at this roster. We always talk about the improvement that we expect from Tyler Hero and Bam Adebayo, Kyle Lowry coming back in better condition. But even if all those things end up happening, right? Hero makes a leap, Bam makes an offensive leap, Lowry's in playing shape. They're going to need something more from Haywood Highsmith, Caleb Martin,
somebody,
Omer Yurtseven. So one of these two-way guys are going to have to pop again. It just feels like Miami keeps, I don't know if it's lucky. I don't think that's fair to them to say that it's lucky, but it's also very unreasonable to expect two-way guys every single year to pop. You just don't see that across the NBA.
Right.
There's teams that, since the two-way contract became a thing, haven't seen a contributor emerge from a two-way spot, let alone every single season. Yeah, exactly. A starter, to your point. So they're gonna need somebody to be this season's Max Strus. In addition to Max Strus has to keep being Max Strus too.
Yeah, that's right.
All right, let's take a look at the over-under win totals here. And then we'll also look at who the Miami Heat's biggest competition is in the East. That's coming up after the break here on Locked On Heat. Reach out to Locked On Heat on Twitter and on Instagram at Locked On Heat and email us, lockedonheat@gmail.com. Vegas has set Miami's over-under wins total at 49.5. That number coming from our friends over at Bet Online. That is in the East, behind the Celtics, the Bucks, the Nets, and the 76ers. Obviously, David, the Heat won 53 games last year. You look at that 49.5 over-under win total, and you're going where? Over or under?
I'm taking the under on that. And it's not a condemnation or an indication of how much they've dropped or that they won't be able to rise to the position of challenger. As high and optimistic as I am on this roster and this team, I think they're just not going to have the same luxury that they had last year of guys like Max Strus or Gabe Vincent or even Omer Yurtseven stepping up and catching the league by surprise. Like, I remember an early interview I did with Max Strus where, you know, he was kind of, you know, he wasn't somebody that teams were planning for. They didn't know what they were. And then eventually he got to the point where he earned enough respect and he was coming around screens and they were yelling out shooter, shooter from the bench because they knew who he was. I don't know that there's anybody in this roster who's going to catch everybody by surprise. Even if Highsmith would have to make such a huge leap at this point for him to become that kind of high-level contributor. Otherwise, like, where's the surprise going to come from? That's kind of why I was hinting at before when I said, well, maybe it's time to implement some kind of new wrinkle in the rotation or to the lineups or something along those lines. Having said, like I said, I think with all that, you look at 49 wins and all the other teams in the Eastern Conference having improved and everything else, I can't see Miami being able to do that. And again, it's not necessarily that they're going to, they're not going to fall for lack of trying. Spo's going to get the most out of this roster like he does every year. 49.5 wins, that's a lot. And I think for this roster,
it's a lot of wins.
Yeah.
It's a lot of games. Especially with basically, you know, the Nets having the season from hell last season. You just imagine that they're going to be better. I know that we like to clown on the 76ers, but I mean, they're going to have James Harden for a full season. They're going to be better. Yeah, they're an improved roster. Like, Atlanta's probably going to have a bounce back year, right? Like, even the Knicks, they might be strong. I think the East is actually really deep.
Yep.
And I think it's much deeper than anyone's last season. I thought it was really deep last year, too. And so there's going to be quite a bit. I think Orlando will be better.
Who's the team that they're beating up on in order to get to 53 wins? I don't see the clear. Indiana is rebuilding.
No, you don't get to play Indiana 82 times. So it's right. And even Indiana does not. It's not like they have a bunch of bums.
Yeah,
like
Ty Halliburton
right now. They might trade Buddy Hield and
he beat Miami when he was with the Kings too. They always caught everybody by surprise. So I mean, it's just it can always happen. You know, no team. I don't think there's any team that you can take lightly in the Eastern Conference.
53 wins last season, like I said, to come. I'm going under also on 49.5, and I would almost make this a lock. I would be very surprised if Miami won more than. You know what? I shouldn't say that. I wouldn't be very surprised because it's the Heat and they always find ways to win games. I should. That's
and
not
even
fair.
That we're going and under, it's going to be like right under 47, 48 wins. I mean, still
something
above
like that.
Yeah,
something like that. But PJ Tucker last year, according to Basketball Reference, and the win shares stat on Basketball Reference isn't like, you know,
an exact science.
Right. But they measured him at 5 win shares. So if you just take 53 minus 5, 48. That's 48. That's the under. Maybe that's how Vegas put this together. So. That said, you're going to get improvements from other guys on the roster that we expect. Bam, Hero, other guys, Kyle Lowry, they could step up and fill that void a little bit. But I also think not just the surprise factor, but COVID kind of helped Miami last year. They were one of the few teams that were fully vaccinated. They did lose players because of the contact tracing and some of this stuff in December. But you look at their December record when it wasn't just the Heat. Players dropping like it was everybody was fielding weird G League Frankenstein rosters.
Yeah.
And Miami just kept winning games. Right. Like their record in December last year was awesome. And that was when they sort of like climbed up the standings and ended up grabbing that one seed and they ended up never letting it go. They're not going to have that weird COVID factor, which was a weird benefit to them last year.
Right.
I think this is going to be a healthier season, not just for the Heat, but in general for the NBA. And I think that's going to weirdly hurt Miami. I think that there will be improvement. There will be improvement from this team. This team might still make the finals. I don't know. I just don't see them winning 49 and a half games. Right. I don't see them winning 53 games the way they did last year. I'm going to go ahead and take the under. That said, let's look ahead, or let's look out to the rest of the East. The biggest competition for Miami in the Eastern Conference. Is it too easy to just say it's Boston because they met in the Eastern Conference Finals, or are you looking somewhere else?
I am looking somewhere else. I still think I honestly think that Philadelphia presents the biggest challenge for Miami just because you've got the experience.
You stole my pick. I was going to come in with a surprise pick with Philadelphia. I was going to wow you, but you went ahead and got there first.
Well,
why Philadelphia? We agree.
I just think you've got P.J. Tucker. I mean, too smart a player, too familiar with what Miami does intimately. So having spent one season with them, and I think that's going to be a huge edge. I also think that Joel Embiid is going to be motivated this year because he was hurt, because Miami disposed of him last year. And I think also you're going to have a much more motivated James Harden as well. And the fact that Miami was able to dispose of the Sixers, maybe perhaps not as easily as they did, but let's say there wasn't as much of a challenge from Philadelphia. Had they been fully healthy, maybe this was a completely different conversation. Mm. But I think they're going to be motivated. They're a better roster. I think their window is not closing necessarily, but they've got a championship window, and it's a legitimate one. And I think they want to be able to capitalize that, because when you go all in and you wind up re-signing Harden for less money and he's willing to make that sacrifice, however dubious the circumstances of those might be, I think that's a huge sacrifice. And I think it's also something that shows a commitment to winning. Now, you can write off the, you know, getting $250,000 from, I don't even know who it was, gave him $250,000 or whatever.
Oh, the Fanatics guys? Yeah. Like the ownership stake and all that kind of stuff?
Yeah, I mean...
Did you see that video of James Harden just throwing his birthday cake off a boat over the weekend?
Was it a real cake? It's just, I mean, whatever. You know what? Don't litter
the
oceans. I don't
know, but that showed me that he's taking his body seriously, David. Yeah, even on his birthday, he's like, no cake for me. Throw that cake in the ocean. No temptation for me, buddy.
Don't litter. Look, don't litter, James Harden.
You're right. They're going all in. They traded draft picks for D'Anthony Melton. They said, I know that everybody's laughing at us for signing P.J. Tucker to $10 million a year until he's 40 years old, but he can help us right now.
It works out.
That shows me that their window is open. I'm going Philadelphia. First of all, this is going to be a hot take, and I don't think Heat fans are going to like me for it. I think if Joel Embiid is fully healthy in the semifinals, I don't think Miami beats them. And you know what? I think the Heat believe that too. I think Miami looked at this front. I think the front office looked at this team and said, in a sober reality, hey, we probably weren't better than that Sixers team. We probably caught a break with the injuries that they got, because Embiid tore us apart when he was playing. And I think that's why you see a team like Philadelphia going all in, and Miami just clearly not. Like right now, I don't think you can argue that the Heat have gone all in on this window. They're not paying the luxury tax. They're not trading away future draft picks for players who can play right now. They're not doing it. Philly is. So I think Philadelphia is the biggest competition. I also think because Boston and Milwaukee, to me, are clearly the top two teams in the Eastern Conference, that they're going to be vying for the 1 and 2 seeds in the East. And when you're looking at maybe Brooklyn getting their guys back, and maybe they're able to be one of the top 4 seeds, well, then to me, it might be Miami and Philadelphia kind of battling it out to see who gets home court advantage in a potential 4-5 matchup in the first round of the playoffs. Not only that, David, Miami plays Boston and Milwaukee 4 times each this season. So there's an obvious chance to split that series 2-2, and it doesn't carry that much weight if you're able to do that. They play Philadelphia just 3 times in the regular season. 2 of those times are in Philadelphia. So Philadelphia is already carrying the schedule advantage. So during the quarter, and the third to last game of the regular season for Miami is in Philadelphia. So the NBA itself is already has already sort of created this rivalry, created this tension between the two organizations, especially coming off of the semifinal playoff series last year. So I think it's Philadelphia. I don't think it's close. I think every single, like those 3 games, each of those games are going to carry so much weight in the regular season, given that whoever wins 2 of them is going to have, if you end up being tied record-wise at the end of the season, there's your tiebreaker right there. So I think that's it. Look, training camp is a month away. We're going to have so much more to cover. Maybe this roster is not fully formed, and then we can add more wrinkles to all this. But it was really great to talk hoops, to really look ahead even a month out into training camp and see what was going on. I think we covered a lot of topics, but we're going to be covering more topics here, as always, on Locked On Heat. But that's going to do it for us today. Remember to like and subscribe to Locked On Heat on YouTube and wherever you listen to your podcast. Thank you so much for making Locked On Heat your first listen every day. For your second listen, check out the Locked On NBA podcast. Every day, news and rumors in the NBA in just 30 minutes every day with Locked On NBA. It's Locked On NBA, your daily NBA update in just 30 minutes. Thanks for joining me, David.
Who throws out a cake like that? Like, what about the rest of the party goers? I just don't care.
I know. Travis Scott was like, yo,
I wanted to eat that.